Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
98. Great.
I can hit those high notes later.
I love it. Yeah. That's really good.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. So my name is Shama Sangeeta.
She read that. My name is...
It's like a teleprompter. It was like, my name is Shama Sangeeta.
My name is Priyadarshini.
And my name is Shamali.
And we are...
The Modern Yogi Podcast.
The Modern Yogi Podcast.
The Modern Yogi Podcast. And thank you for joining us another week as we delve into chapter 12.
Yeah.
And oh my God. Could we do an episode where we just whisper the whole thing?
Yes. And then Arjuna said, oh my God.
I think that would be so funny.
Would people like that? Crazy.
I wonder.
I think like it's like an ASMR trend now. That's so like, what if we do like a whole, like our social media manager just nodding her head.
She's like, yes,
what if we just do like a whole episode? Just
that's
like,
what I'm saying. But I wonder if it would be annoying.
It might be annoying.
I think that would be kind of like fun, it? Actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Another one.
Yeah.
Not this one.
Okay, not this one. Okay, good. Okay.
Nice.
I was like about to go into it.
I know. I saw you. You were ready. Anyways, we are on chapter 12 and we left off on text 4. Yep. That was the last one we read.
Yeah.
And basically what's happening is that Arjuna was saying, hey, like now that I've experienced the beautiful, amazing, glorious and traumatic experience of chapter 11 and seeing your universal form, is it better to, you know, serve you or engage in devotional service directly to you or to worship you in the in-person as the impersonal Brahman?
Mm. And we've kind of figured out that the personal is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of been the theme of the whole Bhagavad Gita anyways, but Arjuna had to ask because now his whole world was changing, right?
I get it.
Right.
We have to be more compassionate to him.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And there's an interesting part in the purport actually of the last texts we read that says the impersonal manifestation, whether it's in the material world or the spiritual world, is problematic for meditation. And it made me think, right, because when we meditate, we're trying to connect in a divine loving connection with Krishna in a personal form. And if we're not trying to connect to his personal form, what are we trying to connect to? There's only so, like, I was thinking, what does that even mean? Problematic for meditation, because right, connecting to the impersonal aspect is like the energy that surrounds us, that which is inconceivable by the senses. How can you connect to that? That sounds difficult, you know?
Yeah, it's like meditate on the aura of divinity. And they're like, who's divinity? Right. What's the aura?
Yeah, what are we connecting to exactly?
Well, and there's a lot of practices in which people like do breath work where they just like breathe, or there's like yoga processes that people do. And the thing is, at the end of the day, like these processes are helpful and they're good. Sure. But they're the long route to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Prabhupada says one can't perfectly conceive the impersonal feature of the absolute. Therefore, Arjuna wants to say, what's the use of such a waste of time? Prabhupada writes. I think, right.
Hello, Prabhupada.
Prabhupada's being like super blunt, like cut the nonsense. No, like... I think we've talked about it before, that breath work and meditation practices, like if they're the impersonal and they ground you and bring you peace, wonderful. But the road goes deeper than that and you can connect in an even deeper way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so basically Arjuna asked the question and then Krishna was like, listen, the only way is to fix your mind on me, right? At the end of the day, that fix your mind, do devotional service, always think of me, have faith in me. And like, that's the most perfect form of connection.
Yeah. And we talked about last episode is like, how can we do more to dedicate this one lifetime to Krishna, right? Whether it's hearing more or chanting more or reading more, offering prasadam, going to the grocery store to buy Krishna flowers. Like what can we do to just dedicate our life to Krishna and do it in these little ways, right? And every single day do those little things.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that Krishna mentioned was there are other ways to reach me, but they're longer. And those ways are sometimes for people that are, and we kind of put a name or like a vision to this kind of person, a humanitarian or someone who's like really believes in self-work and becoming a better version of themselves. But for those people, there's still a long process of understanding they're not this body and understanding that like, or engaging in the welfare of everyone, treating everyone the same. All these processes take a long time to understand, especially if you don't have the roadmap that is the Bhagavad Gita or the Vedic scriptures in general.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
All right. The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Agyanate Mirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. All right, chapter 12, text number 5, Priyadarshini.
For those whose mind, and this is Krishna speaking, mm-hmm. for those whose mind are attached to the unmanifested impersonal features of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied.
Ooh, so Krishna's doubling down here. So he's like, hey, Arjuna said, do I do this impersonally or do I do this personally? And then Krishna said, definitely personally, because impersonally, very, very hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think also of like, what does that look like? And I mean, I don't know, because I've never taken that route of worshiping Krishna in an impersonal way. But as we were mentioning in the recap, I think it's like people who focus on like the yoga systems mm-hmm. as their source of connection to God, right? Whether it's like pranayam.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that better. Or like hatha yoga or this or that, like ways to connect to the body, to control the mind, to control the senses. Like if I put myself in those shoes, maybe it's because I don't understand it because I love Krishna as a person and I am very much attached to this process in this way. But if I put myself in those shoes, like if I were to be struggling, I wouldn't think, let me just go breathe.
Right.
Like I would want some sort of connection, someone to talk to you. And I understand that it's maybe hard to conceptualize for someone who's like, no, God is in everything and everywhere. Like how could you put him to just a person?
Yeah.
But I think that's like what we naturally are attracted to.
Oh, absolutely. You know?
And so, yeah. So, anyways, Krishna is backing down and saying, it is really hard.
Yeah.
I think in addition to like the breath work and the hatha and the yoga systems, there are big religions that don't have a form of divinity.
Right.
And so people are like, why would God have a form, like a personal form? Because that would limit God. And so we have to understand that like, that's their conception of what divinity is. Mm. And that is the impersonal, right? Because there is no personal deity that they're worshiping. It is this concept or this light or this effulgence or, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And it's interesting in the text that he uses the word embodied. Like for us who have a body, it's easier to connect to a personality who has a body. Like you said, Priya, it's natural. And Prabhupada says exactly that. He says it's easier and natural for us embodied souls because we've been the individual soul. We've been embodied. We've had a body since time immemorial. So it's really difficult for us to just simply connect theoretically to some formless being and to also understand that we're actually not a body. So those principles are really hard for us. That's why in Bhakti Yoga, we worship a deity because we can have already some bodily conception, which is already ingrained and conditioned in our mind that can be applied. So Krishna, like you said, Shama, someone might think we're limiting Krishna's unlimited form to a deity. But if Krishna's unlimited, we've talked about this before, through prayer, we can ask him to enter the deity form so that while we're not yet ready to see his pure spiritual form, we can worship the deity. So it's some form of a body. I have a body. We can relate to that. So I can worship him in that way.
Yeah. We can worship Krishna thinking, well, I eat. So Krishna obviously has to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That was so random when you were talking about bodies and stuff. This like that, you know, that Backstreet Boys song is everybody. That was playing in my head while you were talking.
So sing the version that would apply for this.
Everybody. Yeah. Has a body.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Wants to worship another body, yeah.
Lord. That was so good, guys. Back. All right.
Yeah, we're singers. You didn't know that?
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Never do it again.
I enjoy that.
I'm just kidding.
All right, anything else on this purport, ladies?
Well, just Prabhupada really puts a title to them. He says the group of transcendentalists who follow this path of the inconceivable, unmanifested, impersonal feature are called Jnana Yogis. And Jnana means what?
Knowledge.
So we've talked in length before about Jnana Yoga versus Bhakti Yoga. And here Prabhupada's saying in this verse, the difference between both paths is expressed. And I remember once I gave an example about if you have a jar of honey, since Jnana is knowledge, Jnana Yogis would be philosophizing and theorizing. What must that honey taste like? What must it be like? You're speculating.
Yes. Talking about it.
Exactly. Within Bhakti Yoga, Prabhupada says, just open the jar of honey and taste the sweetness. Experience that, and that'll connect you to the personal form.
Yes.
Rather than all this
speculation.
Yeah. And maybe you'll get to understand what the honey tastes like, but until you feel it, ooh, and with that, chapter 11 was really like, until Arjuna saw it, then he had to revisit all the questions after experiencing the honey.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Thank you.
I like it.
Thank you.
Very nice. Prabhupada also goes on to talk about it's just reassuring. Once again, the process of Krishna consciousness, the process of devotional service, right? It says a person in Krishna consciousness engaged in devotional service, having guidance by the bona fide spiritual master, so like a legit spiritual master, by offering regular obeisances unto the deity, which I think is so cool that one has been brought up a couple of times in the Bhagavad Gita. Just paying obeisances is such an important part of...
Translation?
Oh, yes.
Obeisances means bow down.
Thank you.
Very excellent term.
Just bowing down to Krishna, so paying respect to Krishna when you go to the temple or in your own home if you have deities. That process is like mentioned many times in the Bhagavad Gita. It's like a very important part of the process. So being engaged in devotional service, having a spiritual teacher, bowing down to the deity, hearing the glories of Krishna, and eating eating food that has been offered to Krishna. That is like the ways in which you can realize Krishna very easily. Those are the steps, right? Like it's not that complicated. This is what it is.
Not that complicated. And it's like, if something like obeisances, like bowing down, like irks people, because like I can see like how that could be like, why does God want me to bow down, right? I want you to think about like the most respectful cultures in the world, right? Like Japanese culture. Like what do they do when they first meet each other? Like they bow, right?
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of showing like basic respect.
Yeah.
When you see it, people in fights, they do it, and it just looks like there's so much self-control and grace, and also respect for one another regardless of the circumstance, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's like, to me, it's always seemed as like a really loving gesture. But I can understand why for some people it might feel weird. Mm-hmm.
All these things that if you remove the ritualistic element to it, it's actually beautiful. You inherently have something within you that kind of like you incline your body almost in a bowing position when you're showing respect to someone. Mm-hmm. So imagine the Lord is in front of you. You're going to drop down to the floor without even knowing maybe what a obeisances is. Mm-hmm. Like if that were to happen, it's just so natural.
Yeah. I always think about it. I don't know who said this to me, but it's like when you enter the temple, it's like you're entering a castle where the king lives, right? And so like, what do you do when you see the king? You pay your respects and like that's bowing down.
Yeah. What do you have to do when you meet the king, like King Charles, right? It's like people have to bow and curtsy and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Like that is like, you have to do that.
Yeah. And also to give perspective, like with Krishna, it's like, it's just a thing of respect and it's done at the temple or, you know, whatever, but like, it doesn't mean you have to do it multiple times. Like, I was thinking, I watched a little interview and Ella's going to love this. I watched a little interview. It was very short, of like 2 minutes, of the Taylor Swift's boyfriend talking about how they met the...
Oh my God, I think I saw this. I saw it. Yeah.
What is it? They met the prince? Prince Williams?
Yeah, Prince William.
Yeah, and the kids, and they were like not sure whether they should bow or not, right?
Yeah.
They don't know whether to show respect or not. And I guess Prince William was like, no, this is like informal. Like you only have to do that when we're like in the castle, basically.
Yeah.
And so I think you can have different relationships with Krishna, right? It doesn't just have to be like... So at the temple, we just bow down. We're visiting Krishna in his home. We're just being respectful.
Yeah. Like, but if you like walk past a yoga studio and you see a picture of Krishna, you don't have to get on the cement sidewalk.
Exactly.
And bow down. It's
Thank
all about
you.
Time, place, and circumstance.
Yes, 100%. Okay. 100%. You can bow in your heart.
Nice.
Bow in your heart. I love it.
Yeah. And I think the other reason why Prabhupada is talking about how simple it is to do devotional service is because he is really trying to compare it to how difficult it is to achieve the same results with impersonal sort of philosophy, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, basically the whole next page of the long purport, he's basically honing in on exactly that, how unnecessarily troublesome the path is of the impersonal. And with taking a risk of, you know, not even realizing the absolute truth at the end. So,
you know, what's crazy is that like Krishna, there are the two paths, right? And so like Krishna will never say like, do this. This is the only way. Krishna is still giving you both of the, like if you're in a fork in the road, path A and path B. He's telling you what he prefers, but he's also saying that path B has its pros and cons, but it is a lot more difficult. But he's like, he's not saying, but path A only, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of nice because then it's like, you still have the free will to decide which one you want to take. Mm-hmm.
And he's very inclusive of different people experiencing different things, right? Like somebody who grew up in a family in which either people were just agnostic or like they believe in something, but there's no clear path. It doesn't mean that they can't get to him, right? Yeah. So it's like inclusive of anyone who is interested in something more.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That was not a great example, but anyways.
No, you both are saying, the inclusivity and that he makes other paths accessible. I thought of something similar the other day when I was thinking about, okay, how easy is it when you're in a relationship with someone and it ends it, you take that rejection so personally, right? Mm. And I just had a flash of like, what must it feel like for Krishna when someone turns their path back to him and like, this isn't for me, or this path of bhakti isn't for me. I'm not spiritual. I don't believe in God. I don't want this. Oof. And when someone like, let's bring it down to like, it just made me appreciate that quality of Krishna. Cause if someone like you're in a personal relationship with, and someone tells you, you're not really for me, you're not doing it for me, that's hurtful. And I just had a flash of like, that's what so many of us do to Krishna when we turn our backs from developing a personal relationship, or when someone goes to the extent where they say, I don't believe, I don't want it, it's not for me, spirituality has no place in my life, whatever it is. Krishna never turns his back, never gets offended, and always stays there waiting in their hearts with open arms till that person is ready. And I thought, how beautiful.
You know, do you think Krishna gets brokenhearted?
I think,
yeah. Yeah, I think he is kind of like hoping to be loved the way he loves everyone.
But he's not like at home with like a pint of ice cream, you know, just like crying about it. I feel like he is doing what Shamli said, where it's like he knows that that person has free will, so that he will welcome with open arms
when the time's right.
When the time is right.
I think he misses us, but he also maybe feels sad for our own sake because he knows that we'll go looking in all the wrong places and feel lost until we connect with him. Yeah. You know?
That made me think of like a parent, actually.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, Krishna has been compared to a parent many times before, because like, anyone, like children want to do their own thing.
Right.
They don't want to listen to whatever the parent is saying. They want to explore and do and whatever, right? And the parent has to say, okay, like I've tried to tell you all the information that you need to survive in the world. You get to do whatever you want and I'm always here.
Yeah.
And I hope you like come back to me at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a comedy show that I was in, or like, yeah, it was like a play / comedy show. And the guy said, everyone is just trying to fill their God-shaped hole in their heart with everything but God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Everyone's trying to fill the Krishna-shaped hole in their heart with everything but Krishna.
Yeah. And it made me just think how amazing Krishna is, because how many of us, if someone does that in this realm, I know it's different, but let's like make it something we can compare to. How many of us would stay with open arms if someone totally just flat out rejects us, insults us?
Nope.
I don't want to be with you. I don't feel you. This relationship's over. Bye.
Oh my God.
And then you just stay there with open arms whenever you're ready. I'm here to love you. Like, what are you thinking, Shama?
I was literally talking to my partner about this the other day, where it's like, whenever you go through a breakup and like I would literally block that person. On like, so like if they broke my heart, I would block them on like every, you know what I mean? Like, I would not be as graceful as Krishna.
So I was feeling that the other day, how graceful Krishna
is. But that's also like a romantic relationship. What about a friendship? You have to, like,
I would
you've
still
done
block
it.
You.
Look, okay, a friend comes up to you and is like, you've done what?
I've like patiently waited for them to realize.
You are more godly than most of us.
No, I feel like it depends on the relationship, but okay, fine. Whatever.
Like the friend insulted you when you were waiting?
Talked bad behind my back, treated me poorly.
Oh, snap.
Just, what?
Like really, yeah.
And you never retaliated negatively?
No, it's kind of funny. Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of killed her with kindness.
Oh my God. Even though she did all these terrible things to you.
Yeah.
Wow. Shamli, we have lessons to learn here. Okay. We have to learn from this angel of a woman that's sitting next to us.
No, I think it depends on the circumstance the relationship and everything. Yeah.
Wow.
That's interesting. No,
but I do think in like a romantic way or in other ways, I think I would just block and cut things off too. Yeah. Mm. I think it depends. So I think Krishna is like very benevolent.
Right. He does that to everybody.
Everyone, no matter what, no matter how we treat him, no matter what, you know, so...
Yeah. I wonder if that person, your friend, listens to Modern Yoni podcast. You should send this person, no name, this episode.
I will not.
Okay. Well, I just looked up the word benevolent.
I knew she was Googling. Yeah.
Benevolent means well-meaning and kind.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know what that word meant at all. Cool.
Don't we always say God is like benevolent, omnipresent, omnipotent?
Not usually benevolent. Doesn't come up.
We never talked about that word before.
Yeah, I don't think it comes up as much. And the Gita, like word. Omnipresent.
Yeah, I guess so. You're right.
Omnipotent.
Yes, thank you.
Omnipotent.
Oh my God, is that the right word?
I don't know, one of them.
I don't know. And it literally says it here in this purport. The Lord is omnipotent or omnipotent. Take your pick. All powerful.
No, it does.
Shut up.
I highlighted what? It. It says, shut up, Shamali.
Sorry. I was just really surprised. I can't believe
it. Shut up.
Where?
It says, and towards the bottom of the first page of the purport, the Lord is omnipotent, all powerful. Therefore, by his incarnation, he can accept the service of the devotee just to make it convenient for the man in conditioned life. This is kind of saying why Krishna can come into the form as a deity to make it accessible for us. So it's truly not limiting his form because he is, what's the word?
Benevolent.
Sure.
Omnipotent.
There we go.
Omnipotent.
Omnipotent. Okay. Yeah, it does say that. Sure. It does.
I'll point it out later because I couldn't find it right now. It's okay. Let's move on.
Okay.
Wow. So should we do text 6/7?
Ooh, yes.
Yes, we should. I suppose. What else are we going to do?
Okay. Shama Sangeeta.
Ooh, Krishna is saying, and I'll read it really slow so you can read the purport if you need to.
I thought you were going to make a jab. Like, I'll read it real slow so you understand, Shamali.
No. Krishna in... Chapter 12.
Okay. Text, not that slow, please.
Text 6/7 is speaking now. He is saying, Krishna says, sorry, but those who worship me, Krishna, giving up all their activities onto me and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pritha, for them, I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death.
Oh my God.
Should I read it again?
Yes. Yeah. But like, can you like stop so we can...
I can stop.
Yeah. Okay. At every comma.
Sure.
Okay.
Krishna says, but those who worship me...
Okay. Worship him. Uh-huh.
Cool. Thank you. That was very necessary. Giving up... But those who worship me, giving up all their activities...
Shamli's so red. No. She's trying not to laugh.
Shamli,
so
why are you laughing?
Why are you laughing?
Okay, I'll continue while you guys.
Okay. No, I got it.
Okay.
End scene. Okay. But those who worship me, giving up. Okay, I can't do it.
Okay. Giving up all their activities onto me. I think in this case, the word activity means like karma, right?
Yeah.
But is this talking about like fruitive activity?
Fruitive results, yes.
Yes, results. So like give a...
I think the activity and the result.
Yeah, so give an example.
Like
working? Is that okay? Yes. Like working if you work with
firefighter. You're a firefighter.
Yes. Right?
You
humbly get yourself together.
Get it together,
we're
woman.
Trying.
All right. You're a firefighter. You are working for humanity.
Yes.
Humanity. Wait, what is one of those humanity jobs that you can actually just like, you're working for humanity, but you're also giving the results to Krishna. No, this is a bad example.
I'm just trying to, yes. So basically that person saves people.
Firefighter.
I don't know where we're going with this. I like got lost.
No. The point is that if you're giving your activity and your results to Krishna.
Yeah.
Whatever you do.
Whatever you do. If you knit.
Yeah. You knit for Krishna.
You knit for Krishna.
You give the results to Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom. Nailed it.
We did it. Okay.
All right. Moving on.
God, that was so hard. I don't know why.
Are you okay? I'm okay.
Shelby's having a stroke on air. But it's okay. Let's keep going, Priya.
Okay. Go ahead, Shama.
All right. And being devoted to me without deviation.
Mm. Okay. So just being really focused.
Yeah. And I don't think that just means like you can also have an outside job. It doesn't just mean you have to do only temple service. Without deviation is also internal. It's an internal state of mind.
Well, it's just devoted to me without deviation. So just meaning like, you know, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not like, oh, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead on Mondays, but on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Actually, I love Allah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
without deviation.
Without deviation.
Got
right?
it. Okay. Yeah. Engage in devotional service.
Fair enough.
We talked about devotional service. Always meditating upon me.
I think this means thinking.
Yeah.
It's more meditating.
Like, like we talked about in the last episode, like chanting, hearing, reading, offering prasad, offering like flowers, right?
Right. Right.
And having fixed their minds upon me.
Yeah.
That's concentrating on Krishna, right? Krishna consciousness. O son of Printha, he says, Arjuna, for them, I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death.
Mm-hmm.
So we always talked about this rat race that we're in, right? We have lived so millions and millions of lifetimes, and we're born, we grow up, we die, and we do it all over and over again.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that ad nauseum for like forever.
Yeah.
So Krishna is saying that he will take us out of that cycle of birth and death.
Yep. Mm. The moment we do these things, he's like, okay, I got you. I'm gonna get you out of there. It doesn't matter how many lifetimes you were supposed to go through.
Mm.
It doesn't matter anything. I understand, like, you know, you figured it out. Like, we can be happy.
Yeah,
I got you.
This is literally the code, like the this is the key, following these instructions to get out of this cycle of birth and death.
Yeah. And what an interesting imagery that of the ocean, because the ocean shows that we are drowning, whether you realize it or not. Maybe some have more material comforts than others, and they might think, nah, life is nice, life's beautiful, treated me right, I'm not drowning. But everyone is drowning. Life, this world is full of suffering. And the only way to not drown is if you're spiritually connected. Because then no matter what wave comes your way, what turbulence, you have that deep inner grounding connection, that lifeline that's going to help you not drown.
Yeah. And in this case, you mean material ocean, right? So like,
we're talking
about like being here in this world, and like, there's Maya saying like, hey, binge watch TV for a whole week and do nothing else. Or there's like Maya saying, look, there's a new type of snack that you can eat for days in an end and no, don't get any nutrition
or whatever,
right? Like Maya's always trying to entrap you in the ocean. So in this case, it's not like a fun ocean that you go swim in. It's kind of like wave after wave trying to push you down. It's
That's not a fun ocean.
That is not a fun ocean.
Yeah. It says that although a man who has fallen in the ocean may struggle very hard and may be expert at swimming, he cannot save himself, Prabhupada says, because someone needs to come and pick him up from the water and rescue him. So similarly, the Lord will personally come and save our devotees from this material existence. Mm. So absolutely, it's not a fun ocean. We're not picturing a sunny day in Santa Monica that you go swimming and it's wonderful. It's a turbulent ocean where life is going to be hard and the waves will thrash you around. And we just talked about this, Shama, coming over, that when someone's not spiritually connected, they will drown more through life. And you need to be spiritually connected to not, we're all going to go through difficult scenarios, but what we do and how we respond to the situations makes a world of a difference. And if we're spiritually connected, you won't drown. No matter how you'll experience the emotions, you'll grieve, you'll go through sadness, anger, whatever it is, but it won't rattle you so much to your core to where you are drowning and are lost with no direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Because in this material world, if you don't have spirituality, if something to connect you to the higher knowledge, to Krishna, to the supreme goal, then what happens when life is really hard, which is meant to happen because that's what this material world is for, right?
Yeah.
What happens is you might go to vices. You say like, I can't live this anymore. Mm-hmm. I got to like take off the pain and drink or do this or do that. And then you just go deeper and deeper into this place where you're further and further from spirituality and like self-development and connection to the supreme and everything else, right? Mm-hmm. So it is a huge difference to be spiritually connected in any capacity than to not have it at all.
Yeah.
And also Krishna says here that he's saying like he himself will deliver us, right? Mm. And I think Prabhupada's making a point here that because Krishna's saying that, he's also kind of stating it that like we are secure. And he says a child is completely cared for by his parents and thus his position is secure. Similarly, a devotee does not need to endeavor to transfer himself by yoga practices to other planets. Rather, Krishna, by his great mercy, comes at once and at once delivers a devotee from material existence. Mm.
That's so sweet, right? To think of that the Lord will come himself to take care of us personally.
Yeah. It also, that sentence, when you just said it back to me, reminded me of, I think you said it, I don't know, someone here said it, that like death is not so scary if we think of death as Krishna, because if you think about your last days is, you know, Krishna's coming to get you, then it's like, well, Krishna's been my lifelong friend. So what is there to fear?
Mm. Yeah. That's what Kadama Kanana Maharaj, my guru, would say approaching death. He'd say, what's there to fear? If I was just facing death, that's one thing, but I'm facing Krishna here. So, I'm fine. He had such a nonchalant attitude about it.
I love like his easygoing nature. Like that is so, so admirable actually.
Yeah.
And so it's really relieving for anyone who's afraid of death, right? Yeah. To think of it that way, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Let me connect to Krishna deeper and deeper. So when I see him at the end, it could be like best friends being reunited.
Yeah. And if Krishna is everything, Krishna's death. So there's nothing to worry about if I've developed that friendship with Krishna.
Yeah.
And
I want to loop back to one thing you said, Priya, about this is a big one. If you're not spiritually connected, you're going to turn to vices. And now that you've kind of ran by that sentence, but that is the reality for so many people in this world, that depression's on a rise. There's so many statistics showing that. And people turn to whatever the vice might be, parties, drinking, things that they're running away from their internal reality because it's that uncomfortable, rather than sitting with it because they don't have any tools how to navigate it. And I believe in talk therapy, but also no matter how much you talk about a situation, if you don't have something to transcend it also in conjunction with whatever remedies you're using to help yourself, you're not going to you're not going to stay afloat, you know? So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to add to your point.
Yeah.
Because like Kali Yuga is known astrologically, of course, astrologically as the age of Rahu, right? Rahu is Kali Yuga, Rahu is the son of Maya, right? Mm. And so everything that Maya Devi is could like keeping us in the ocean of birth and death and like distracting us. And so Rahu does that for her, right? That's like Rahu's job. And Rahu is known not only for distraction, confusion, but also like technology, right? And addiction, right? Those are also traits of Rahu. And what's interesting is Rahu is the major planet that influences Kali Yuga. And why do you think everyone is addicted to phones, right?
Interesting.
Because it's addiction and it's also technology, right? And it's like, what are we trying to escape when we go down on our phones and we keep scrolling? It was like, we're trying to escape the reality of life, right?
Absolutely.
Like things that help us go deeper. We don't do that when we're on our phones, right? And so it's very, very like the phone addiction is only going to get worse in Kali Yuga, actually.
And you know, to build on all of this about the rising depression and addictions and the vices that you mentioned, it made me think of something that Keshav Swami said. He said, being a spiritualist is not about how many times we go to a temple or how many books we've read, although those are nice and do them. It's really about a fundamental way of perceiving the world and life and challenges that arise in a completely different way. Because if I'm disconnected, I'll go through difficult scenarios and feel like, oh my gosh, why me again? What miserable luck. It's a whole spiral of negativity. But if I'm a spiritualist, I'll think, okay, I'm just a spark of the divine. I'm here for a brief moment in time and I'm here to grow, evolve, connect to my source and then leave. So I'm going to try to see and perceive this challenging scenario as something that's happening for me, not to me. So what can I learn from this? You know,
I love that. I feel like that's exactly how I think of life.
Yeah.
But I love the way you said it, the way he said it, the way you said it, because he said it. Just so good. So good.
Yeah.
I love
the
way that you said what he said.
Thank you. I'm great at repeating stuff.
it's actually a talent. Yeah. Like I remember the sentiment of things, but I can't quote them back so precisely. I think it's a really great, useful skill, especially for applying things yourself, because you remember exactly what was said. Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah, well, things like that really stick to you, no? That's the whole point of our bhakti philosophy. Like, we're trying to apply it.
Yeah, and so on that note of astrology,
Yeah,
not really. It's not really a big thing, but it's just a little touch. It's just Prabhupada says here.
I'm so excited.
It's only one sentence.
The first time I'm paying attention this whole episode. Oh my God. I'm joking.
No, so basically he reiterates, you know, there's this one process that's the only process to really get back to Krishna, that Krishna will take you himself. That honestly, the whole, it says, I'm going to go to that, the astrology thing in a second, but it says the purport of this verse is that one should not engage in the different processes of fruitive activity or cultivate knowledge by the mental speculative process. So no jnana yoga and no, not getting attached to the actions and the fruits of our actions, right? And basically it says, one who is devoted to the Supreme Personality can attain all the benefits derived from the yogic processes, speculations, rituals, sacrifices, charities, etc. That is the specific benediction of devotional service. And the only thing you have to do is chant the holy name of Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So basically,
you said you were going to mention astrology.
Yeah, I'm getting there. So basically, there's like, you know, there's all these things that people do. They're like, oh, if I'm just charitable, then, you know, good things will happen to me. Or if I do sacrifices or this or this or that. But Prabhupada here is saying, just chant Hare Krishna, follow this process. And like, that's the great benediction of this Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. And he also goes on to say, there is no need for one to consider the sinful actions of his past life. Mm-hmm. Because the Supreme Lord takes full charge of him, right? So basically, I was going to bring up the fact that like, this is another concept that sometimes people really get caught up in, like karma, right? And like, oh, like I got to do good things because let me phrase it like this. I went to an astrologer and this astrologer specifically was like, okay, this is who you were in your past life. And these are the things you did. Because of the things you did in your past life, you have accrued bad karma. And it's presenting in the following ways. He'll tell you something along the lines of like, you will have illnesses in the upper, lower, right, left side of your body, whatever it might be.
Right.
And mine was very specific. I've had two different readings and I think they're both different past lives. But I was an Indian man. From South India.
Yeah, you were.
And I had a son. And apparently I did not let my son be happy in their marriage. Right? And because of that, I have some karmic situation in a particular aspect of my life. And so if you hear something like that, you might think, okay, like, what can I do? What are the rituals? What are the things? And like, he definitely, those things are given, right? But Prabhupada here is saying like, whatever you've done in your past life, Krishna only cares about your intention now and what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Krishna is not looking at you and judging you for all the things you've done in the past. We've done all kinds of crazy things in the past, right? He's looking at you and looking at your sincerity and your effort now and your effort in chanting the holy name and connecting with him and getting closer to him. So I thought that was a really cool point too, because I do think that some people are concerned about those aspects as well.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's true.
I think I need to embody that. That's really, because I do think about my past life and I'm like, oh, I did that wrong. And ergo, this is why this is going wrong. And so like, I do think about it and I do speculate about it. And I do have great enjoyment from thinking about it. But but I do need to do what Prabhupada said, where it's like, don't worry, just focus, dedicate this one life to Krishna and just like do what you can do now with the right intention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get stuck in the past, right? Like if you make some mistake in the past, like just move forward. What can you do now?
Yeah. Wow.
I love that point. That's true.
Yeah.
Clean slate, focus on Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then what if like you are repeating similar mistakes, right? Because there was another astrologer that said that in every lifetime, we have about three lessons to learn.
Yeah.
Right. And if we don't learn those three lessons, and this is a Vedic astrologer.
Yeah.
If we don't learn those three lessons, we reincarnate over and over again. Right. And those lessons are often repeated lifetime after lifetime. So I do think that there is some positive benefit of understanding what you keep messing up on.
Oh, for sure.
And then correcting that and dedicating your life to Krishna.
Yeah, I think
hand in hand.
For sure, for sure. I think the big picture is that if you're so focused on Krishna that Krishna is your everything, you're not making those mistakes. But that's really hard to attain.
That's idealistic.
It's idealistic. Right. It's like, I mean, we're all trying to be that, right? But in the process of being that, being super hyper focused on just Krishna and Krishna consciousness, we're still maybe making those mistakes that you're talking about that the astrologer said, right?
Right.
So it doesn't hurt to understand where we could do better. But at the end of the day, the goal is to just think of Krishna all the time.
That's a good goal.
I totally agree, Priya. When you were phrasing your question, that popped into my head that I was thinking, I mean, that's idealistic, but that's what they say, right? The chanting, the devotional service is the means and the goal. So it's the means because it's going to, as we purify ourselves, then if you're so connected to Krishna, technically you won't be, I don't know.
Making the same mistakes again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like I always thought, I mean, I think it's really hard, but I always thought like they say like, just speak about Krishna. The only thing that should come out of your mouth is things about Krishna.
I would be out of a job.
Okay. Well, I guess. Yeah.
No, but it's true though. That's a great goal.
But imagine imagine what that looks like. Realistically speaking, that is very difficult. Mm. Right now we're spending hours talking about Krishna. That's amazing. That's wonderful. Right.
But how much time do we do that in our entire month?
Yeah.
A couple hours.
Exactly. Like it's a goal to attain hopefully at the end of this lifetime, right? Or by then at least. And you can see some examples like in Jumna Swami or Kadambakanana Maharaj or Keshava Swami, where literally everything they're doing is Krishna.
Yeah.
Right. Their every day, their every conversation is Krishna or something related to Krishna. So, you know, I can see how for some people it's achievable, but it's a really hard thing for average folks like myself.
Okay, how about we make it like one day of homework? Like this next week that's coming up or whenever you listen to this podcast, like the week that's coming up, everything that we do is like we just talk about Krishna. Whenever I know like it's probably not possible during your 9 to 5. You can't be like, and then in Q4 we have this growth chart in Krishna. You know, like it's hard to like have Krishna integrated. But like when you're not at work, morning and then evening time, all you do is talk about Krishna for one day.
Yeah. I think that's cool.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, that goal applies to the listeners also.
Yeah.
This is for us. Yeah. For all of us.
This is for us and the listeners. Nice.
That's cool.
Challenge accepted.
So entire morning and entire evening.
Beautiful.
Only talk about Krishna.
Yep. That's it.
Okay. Well, I got to tell my husband because I mean.
Y'all have to do it together.
Yeah. And you have to do it with your partner as well.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Deal.
I can't wait to hear how this goes.
I love it.
This is so fun.
Okay.
Some things are probably going to be far-fetched. Like, the color blue shirt that he's wearing in this series I'm watching reminds me of the blue of Krishna.
And that's okay. Because you're still Krishna conscious.
So wait, does that mean that every word or like everything we're talking, like everything that comes out of our mouth that day has to be relevant to Krishna?
Yes.
I love this so much.
That's so good. Okay.
This is so funny.
An entire morning, an entire evening dedicated. Okay. Every single thing out of your mouth.
All right.
Deal. That's the challenge.
I love it.
Well, I think we've reached the end of the episode. Is there anything else you want to share?
Shamling definitely has something she wants to say.
I like to highlight. Yes. No, last sentence the Prabhupada says, because we're talking about right now, basically rendering service to Krishna, talking about Krishna. And Prabhupada really phrases it that if we're not doing this, then we will render service to Maya. And we don't often think of it in the black and white terms of if I'm not doing service to Krishna, I'm serving something and that will be Maya or my senses. Maya, you know?
100%. Because Maya's job is to distract us. And if we are distracted, Maya wins. We are serving Maya. Ergo, serving Maya.
Ergo. So you can think of it in that categorized way. You know, like we know our intentions. So I think it helps with this challenge. What are your intentions in what you're doing or what you're saying? Are you trying to serve Krishna or are you trying to serve Maya? And the last line I like, Prabhupada says, our life mission is to please Krishna and sacrifice everything for Krishna's satisfaction, just as Arjuna did in the battlefield of Kurukshetra.
Wow.
So following in Arjuna's footsteps.
Beautiful. All right. Please join us next time for chapter 12, text number 8. Right?
Yes.
All right. Yes.
See you guys next time.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.